And we're back. Thanks, by the way, for all the great questions that are coming in. If you don't mind, we're going to hold off on answering those until we've got the actual brains of the outfit along. So we'll be waiting, we'll be handling your questions during the SME session. Subject matter experts.
Well, yeah, let me just clarify. It's not that we can't answer them, but obviously I'm sure you appreciate that.
Sorry.
That we're on a tight schedule here, so we'll do our best as we go along. But any we can't sort of handle as we go on, we will come. We'll definitely come back to them at the Q&A session at the end of the second session today.
Indeedy. OK, so now I'm going to go just switch to my deck. What I'm doing today is basically, if you've got the situation where you've made yourself a rinky-dinky Windows XNA game for the phone and you want to actually put it onto Marketplace and start getting money, make it behave like a well-behaved game citizen, Windows Phone application, then that's what this session's all about. So I shan't be talking too much about the inner guts of XNA, because that kind of stuff is quite well known. The XNA on the phone behaves according to the rules and works very nicely. But there are some issues that you need to know about if you're writing applications for the phone, specifically targeting that device. So we're going to have a whole bunch of hopefully good stuff, 98 slides worth. We're going to look at how the screen works, how games and the operating system interact, discussion of tombstoning and all that kind of good stuff from an XNA perspective, which is actually quite hard information to dig out, as I discovered last week. Bit about game data persistence, the role of the back button in XNA games, how to fire off other applications, and finally a little bit about making sure your game appears in the right place on the phone menu. So that's where we're going. We're going to do it all in about 90 minutes, but it'll seem much longer. These are the jokes, folks. There will be demos depending on how long my nerve holds. And so without further ado, let's get on with the first bit. This is a little bit of a rehash of stuff we mentioned earlier, but taken slightly further so you can make sure that your games look their best and behave in a way that's most useful to the player. The first thing really to think about is the orientation issues. You can make your game work in any orientation you like. You can make a portrait game or a landscape game, not a problem either way. If you really want to, you can actually make a game that responds to changes in orientation and actually converts from one to that. That's kind of impressive. It's not necessary, I guess, but it does make it look rather sweet. If you make a brand new XNA game and just fire it up, you're going to get a landscape game. You're going to get a game that's played with the phone on the side. So on the image, you have to flip it over so you can see it properly. And so that's the default setting. But you can also, in the game class constructor, you can start making demands on the XNA system about what it is you want to actually use to display your game. And the first thing you can do, a thing worth mentioning to start with, is you can tell the system, OK, this is how big I want the screen to be. And in the screenshot you can see at the moment, we've got a width of 480 and a height of 800. This is the highest res game you can write. This is basically the full res of the Windows Phone platform. And you set those two properties, and that's what you get. As far as the hardware is concerned, it's going to give you that. You're going to get a portrait game with that particular resolution. And this is done using the scaling hardware, actually, in the phone, which is tremendously useful. It's so good that I want to spend just a few seconds talking about this. The scaler will take whatever size you ask for and make it look right, okay? And it does this in hardware on the fly, and it will interpolate. So if you set a lower res than the screen's capable of, it'll actually fill in the dots and remove jaggies and make it just look a little bit blurry. And it'll go from 240 pixels square up to full res.
So a bit like one of those upscaling DVD player kind.
Absolutely. It doesn't add detail, but what it does do is it makes sure that it doesn't look bad. And if the screen, actual aspect ratio is not one that matches the screen, it'll put black bars around it so that you actually you get letterboxed or whatever it is to make it look okay. And the final thing it does, which is great, is it means that your touch positions are made to line up too. So whatever it does to the screen, it'll then scale the inputs from the touch thing so that your coordinate system is consistent right across. And this is tremendously useful. It's a very, very powerful thing. Few more points about that before we do move on to orientations. If you have a game which is chugging at 800 by 480, try it at a lower resolution, half the resolution. That means the hardware now has a quarter of the work to drive the display, and it can make an awful difference. The user, they might see it looking a little bit more blurry, but they'll certainly appreciate the boost in speed. And I've taken programs that are completely unplayable at the high res and actually made them work rather nicely simply by just turning the scaler on and getting it to do the work of making the display. The other thing about using the scaler is it makes your games future-proof. If a new Windows phone comes out with a double resolution screen, doesn't matter. If you ask for the size that you know you're going to work with, the scaler will then take care of that. So keep that in mind. It's a very, very useful trick. I'm not sure it's a Silverlight thing. You can't do it with Silverlight, I don't think. Silverlight gives you what the phone's got, and that's it.
Well, yeah, but you could apply a scale transform on your content, so which would have the same effect.
If we're assuming that the two things use the same hardware, that's not a bad plan as well. Yep. But the other thing which you can do in your game, if you can support orientations of different ways around, then you can actually tell in the constructor. So here I'm saying my game can do portrait, landscape left, and landscape right. There's no setting for upside down. I had this theory about phones that the phone will work much better upside down, because if you're holding it like this, you see with your finger going up and down, you want to press the start buttons, it's much easier if they're up here. So I reckon that one of the things you should do, I asked the guys this afternoon in the SME, why don't you make the phone work upside down, because the buttons are easier to press with your thumb.
Yeah,
and then they'll I'll get bundled out of the building.
You will, yes.
And the fast car will drive off towards a ravine, and that'll be me. But I digress. You can specify what aspect ratios, what orientations you want, and the game that I put above is telling the system, look, I can work in any orientation. And the system will use the accelerometer in the phone to detect which is which, and it will then send me messages to indicate that the phone has been tipped one way or another. So there's a Windows orientation event that you can bind to, and if you do that, then a method will get fired to actually tell you the screen has actually tipped. Now, as far as you're concerned, the big issue here is that the width and the height will flip over when you go from landscape to portrait. So you may want to rescale your objects, you may want to change the amount of screen you're displaying, all kinds of things like that.
Imagine in most games, you know, you're going to start in a particular orientation, and the user will expect to stay in that orientation. So games that actually reconfigure themselves are probably rarer than actually maybe Silverlight kind of user productivity based apps and this sort of thing.
If you want to show off,
right.
Then you would do this. But yeah. I quite agree. Some games just lend themselves to being one way. A driving game in portrait mode is probably not what you're going to do. You're going to have that in landscape, and so you're going to go from there.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a demo which I can use to show that, which you can download and play with. But if everyone's okay, I'll actually step over this one, because basically it's just it puts the cheese in the right place on the screen, whichever way you look at it. And you can download this and play with it. And basically it's a method that gets fired when the orientation changes, and then it just asks the system, okay, how wide are you, how high are you, and then puts everything right. So if everyone's okay with that, because we've had a little bit of a shortfall on the time, I'll step over that one and keep moving forward to the interesting and scary stuff.
Right.
tombstones abound. But this is another trick which is worth bearing in mind as well, and again I'll mention this one. The Windows phone uses the top of the screen for status information, but it doesn't like to bother you with stuff, so quite often it hides it. Now, if you've got the phone set for the default colour scheme with the black background, you don't always see that this status bar is there. But if you fire up an XNA game, the screen space is stolen from you. What I've done here in the screenshot you can see is I said, OK, change the background colour to light so everything's lit up. And what you can see on there is a default XNA game just running on the device. And what the hardware's done is it's gone, OK, I haven't got as much of the screen as I would like, so I'm using the scaler to actually put black bands around my picture.
The sort of letterbox thing you said.
Letterboxing it, and it's taking away the top bit. Now, the first few times I did this, I didn't actually notice that my screen was smaller than it should be. But as soon as you make the background light, it stands out, as you can see in the thing. Now, it's a very, very simple change to make to your code, just to say, use the full screen. It's the same thing you would use in an XNA game on the Windows PC to say, use full screen rather than the window in form somewhere. You just say graphics.use full screen is true in your initialize method, and pow, you now get the full screen.
In fact, in Silverlight, there's an attribute on the phone application page class where you can do effectively the same thing to show or hide the status bar.
Yeah, there's kind of like a recurring theme here, actually, people, which is that you're going to start seeing that we're learning the XNA way to do some of the things that Silverlight does, and they all bind through to the same internal bits and pieces in the phone. So I do that as a matter of course. If anything's going to happen of interest, like phone calls and stuff, they'll get popped up over your game anyway. So as far as you're concerned, I'd rather have the whole screen and then just make it work with there. But the thing that kind of impressed me was that it did such a really good job of scaling that it took me about a week to figure out I wasn't getting the full screen. Anyway, yeah. I changed to light background for artistic reasons, and suddenly this big white bar appeared. Where does that come from? And so there you go, which is quite nice. So keep that in mind. Look better. Final thing on screens, the lock screen. You can configure your Windows phone to turn itself into lock mode after a given number of minutes. I think 30 seconds is the shortest, and it's a minute, 3 minutes, and 5 minutes, or never. And the idea is that if you leave the phone alone for a while, it'll shut down. It actually monitors user behavior, and if you touch the screen or press a button, then it'll keep the screen alive. But if you write an XNA game which is controlled by tipping it, then you'll find that after the relevant time, your screensaver will kick in and the player will lose their game. The lock screen will drop down on top and the game will actually stop at that point. So games that are controlled just by tipping the phone are liable to be timed out. Fortunately, there's a piece of magic you can use here. You can basically say to the XNA game, please don't allow the screensaver to drop in. And so you just put guide.isScreensaverEnabled equals false, and that actually stops the screensaver from kicking in. Now, again, as I was saying a bit earlier, this is the stuff which is, again, a carryover from how XNA games work on the Windows PC, and you can do the same thing there as well. And the guide, if you've not seen that before, the guide is the thing you interact with the user to actually pull up gamer tags and achievements and bits and pieces and have conversations with them. And this is just a property that says, OK, Mr. Guide, don't get involved if the screen timer goes ping. My theory on this really is that it's a mildly dodgy thing to do, because if the user starts your game and then finds that in an hour's time their phone's mysteriously gone flat because they walked away from it thinking it would time out and it didn't, then you're going to get the phone a bad name and your game an even worse name. So what I tend to do on the games that I write that are controlled by accelerometer is I have some touch input as well. So I'll have a speed button or something which they have to press or move around whilst tipping the phone. And if you do that, you're providing just enough touch input to actually keep the game running.
Well, and I guess you could implement your own kind of user idle detection. If you hadn't had anything from the accelerometer in a period of time, then...
Yeah, but to me, you kind of... I mean, what I do, because you can turn timeout back on again, what I would do is I just make sure that when the user's playing the game, they're actually touching the screen and making actions as well as tipping.
Yep.
And that means that they can time out or whatever, and it makes no difference to me. And if they leave the machine on a shelf for a while, it will always time out. So do bear in mind. And if you're talking about awesome, strange and scary powers, take a look at this. Have a look in the Windows phone help for a thing called application idle detection mode, because this is really strong, scary magic. There's a mechanism by which a game can be kept running when the lock screen, kicks in. And this is for use in things like turn-by-turn navigation, where you've got something continuously reading from the GPS device and then updating a map and doing all kinds of stuff. And you don't want that to tip over just because the users let it lock for a few seconds. Now, if you're writing a game where you have a virtual world ticking over, and you want that to keep on ticking while the phone is locked, you can manage this property to keep your game going. I think this would be an extremely dodgy thing to do, personally.
I know that the marketplace, if you read the criteria from the marketplace, submission criterion, for an application that wants to use this, certainly it must actually explicitly ask the user for permission to do this, so that they are aware that it is doing this. So these are some of the things you have to be aware of. And if you submit a game or Silverlight application to Marketplace where you haven't actually asked the user to allow this feature, they will pick up that you are asking this feature, and you will fail submission process. So.
Yeah, I think if you do want to have a real-world kind of background thing ticking on in the back, don't do it by leaving the game running. There are much better ways to accelerate time and keep things going in the background. So if you do want to use some kind of SimCity or background type behavior, then don't do it by leaving the program running. I just mentioned it for completeness.
Sure.
It's probably quite a useful thing in a Silverlight context, if not in an XNA context. So that's the easy stuff. Okay. Now we're going to get to some of the more sort of deep dive nitty gritty stuff, and we're going to look at how Windows Phone OS and XNA games can dance together and tango and do all kinds of good things. And I am going to consider tombstoning in quite mind-mangling low levels of detail. So if you haven't seen it before, then by the end of this, oh boy, you will definitely have seen it, okay? And it might even make sense to you, which is nice. As Andy said before, we can't multitask. We'd love to be able to, but until they can make batteries that last forever the size of a postage stamp and memories that are enormous that fit in these small devices, we're going to have to live with some compromises to fit on the hardware that we've got. And the one that hits us on the phone straight away is that you can't run your application at the same time as somebody else's. That's not because the underlying OS can't do it. Windows CE is quite happy to run more than one thing at a time. And in fact, it will do this. You can play music and do other bits and pieces while your applications are running. It's just that they don't let applications run together. And so we have to live with that. And the good news is that there are tricks and things you can do to get the illusion that your game is always ready and is only ever interrupted. The effect you're going for is if I'm using my desktop and I minimize something, when I maximize it, it comes back exactly as it was when I dropped it onto the taskbar.
Right.
That's what they want you to do in your games. And what I want to do in the next few minutes is basically go through how you do it, how it works, and how you can make an XNA game work like this. So this is where I'm headed with this stuff, okay? As it says here, applications and sudden death. Effectively, at any given instant, you can get torpedoed. Worst case, someone could unplug the battery.
No recovery from that one.
That's a bit nasty.
Yeah.
I remember one of the best stories I ever heard was a guy who wanted to have an alarm on the wanted a light to come on when the battery was flat. That was quite funny. I want a warning light that means the battery's failed. That's going to be tricky. But I digress. The user expects that the application, the game, whatever they're doing, will just come back and be friendly, be alive, just as they left it. And we have to do the plumbing to make all that happen. As far as the phone is concerned, in the context of a game, you can break bad things down into two categories, okay? You've got your external events that occur. Someone rings you up just as you're in the middle of a boss level, okay? Bullets, machine guns, bad stuff. And it's your mum saying, have you changed your underwear yet? No, mum. but you might have to in a minute. And then so you go from there. That situation is one. The other one is the scenario where the user says, I'm bored with this, and presses the start button and wants to go off and do something else. Or they see a nice picture opportunity, they press the camera button, or they decide to just search for a restaurant to have tea, or they turn the phone off. And those are the more sort of final, the more terminal ones. So I want to take you through what to do in your game and how to manage these as we go along. External events, yeah, phone calls. Now, the thing that's interesting about this and the thing you need to be aware of is that when these take place, your game is not actually tombstoned at this point. It does not end running. The game keeps going. The phone comes up on top of the game as it runs in the background, but the game itself is busily chugging along behind. Now, if you are in the middle of that boss level fight and your mum rings up and the game keeps going, you get to watch all your lives disappear
yes.
underneath the phone call.
This would be upsetting.
Which is not going to end well.
No.
So one of the things you can't do about this external event is ignore it. Because, well, if you're doing a puzzle game, if it's a word game where you've got no time issues and the user just types in the word that matches the clues or whatever, and there's no issues to do with speed, perhaps you can ignore it at that point. But in any other situation, if someone makes a phone call, your game has got to react in a sensible way. And like I said at the bottom of the slide, the best thing to do for the game is to drop into pause mode at that point. So you have an event handler which you bind to the incoming call that says, OK, call coming in, we pause the game. When the call's dropped off, we get the game coming back, it's in pause mode, they hit the continue button, and off we go again. So the idea is that if you get a phone call, the game stops automatically, and then you can deal with the phone call and come back. The code, sorry about the actual slide layout here, it's not quite as neat as it could be, but you can read the big words, which is the most important thing. It's a couple of events which you combine to activated and deactivated, and the code I've got here, just in the initialized method for the game, binds a couple of methods to those, and then I'm just printing messages to say they've been fired at this point. If you've written games for the desktop, you will, and also for the Xbox console, you'll have already thought about this if you've ever used the guide, because if you're playing a game and the user presses the guide button on their XNA gamepad, then the same kind of thing happens, and your XNA game can get told, hey, the guide's come up, it's time you went to sleep or did something sensible. So you combine to these events in the same way in the XNA context on consoles and desktops as well. As far as we're concerned, it means phone calls come in and SMS has come in. You've got to stop running the game now, because otherwise you're going to really upset your user. Okay? So you bind to those, and it all just comes out in the wash. Second, the thing about this tech is there's always more than one way of doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is. It's sort of, we can't just have one way. We have to have lots of things, ways of doing it. So second way of doing the same thing is to actually override
method,
a couple of methods. Mm-hmm. And these are game methods, unactivated and deactivated. And I was racking my brains as to think, what's the difference? Why are they different? Why are there two? And I'm thinking that if you bind to the event, you probably get your own thread. You probably get a thread fired that runs through your handler and then just terminates. If you override the method, you're on a different, you're actually in a part of the game. Now, I'm perfectly prepared to be shot down in flames for being horribly wrong about that, but that's the main reason I can think of for having two different methods. I don't care which of the two you use, but you have to do something. You could do both if you like. Probably overkill. The thing you have to watch is that the activated event's very friendly and keen to be noticed. And so you'll get one of these when the game starts up from cold. So you'll also get one of these to say, hey, we're alive, we're running, when the game restarts. And this, the timing on when this event arrives is not actually guaranteed to be sort of nailed down. So you might get it after your load content's finished, you might get it before. And if you just go, oh, whenever I get activated, I drop out of pause mode into play mode, then that might be dangerous too, because you might get one of these where the game isn't actually in pause mode properly. They were supposed to be at the menu, and suddenly the thing comes back and the game starts playing itself.
Yep.
Now, this is spooky and not guaranteed to make a very good user experience. So you're going to have to do a little bit of state management here to make sure that when you get the activated method coming back, the context in which you start the game running again, if that's what you're going to do, is a sensible one. So it's not hard, it's just best if you think about it before you have the problems.
Yep.
So there you are. That's the easy one. Now for the biggie. Now for the sudden death. If the user gets bored with your game, which people have
hopefully
been known,
never
have been known to play Cheese Lander for hours. Wow. Never get the battery goes flat. You know, the house burns down. Everything else, but they're still landing that cheese on that bread. If you haven't seen Cheese Lander, by the way, don't worry, you will. It's coming. Coming soon on this channel.
Coming to a marketplace near you.
Absolutely. I'm thinking, I might put it in and charge $500 and then just see what happens.
I can tell you what will happen.
Fair enough, thank you. Tombstoning is the Windows Phone 7 way of saying you're dead. And so what happens at this point is that your program will be terminated. And we're trying to preserve the illusion that we've just gone away and we're coming back. And so if the user presses start, if they press search, if they fire up the camera, then your game is going to be terminated at that point. And so you have to deal with this. And it isn't a thing you can put off, you just got to do this. And the nice thing is there's some lovely examples out there, and there's some sample code that I've put together that means you can basically pick up a pattern and then use it. And once you've built the pattern for one game, next game you write, you can use the same pattern for that, and you can go on and just, it's very, very easy to do, so no worries there, really. there you go. One uber health warning, okay? Like I said, lots of different ways to do this. If you look at an XNA game, you'll find there are on-exit methods that you can capture to detect when the game is being stopped, and all kinds of other bits and pieces as well. My experience with those has not been good, okay? If you want to do this kind of thing, you should really use a thing called the phone application service to actually get the events to tell your game what's happening, because this runs in the right context and seems to behave itself the best. So steal this code I'm just going to show you now, and you'll be okay. Anything else, and I'll give you a health warning or two. And so there's four of them: launched, closing, deactivated, and activated. Activated and deactivated in this context mean something completely different from phone calls. So one of the things that confused me mightily was that we have the same name being used to mean two different things in the middle of the API. So forget what I said about phone calls for now. We'll come back and deal with that a little bit later. But these are the events we're worried about. You have to get in a namespace, microsoftphone.shell, and a couple of new resources. When you build an XNA game, you get XNA. But now we're going to be stealing some phone behaviors. So we have to lob these two resources in, phone and Windows, and then pick that namespace up. And at this point, away we go. And again, my bottom bullet point there, if I could make it red and flash, I would do that. Don't use any of the XNA exit events. Do it this way, because I know this way works. It's surefire guaranteed will work. And here are the bindings that I put together. There's four of them. Phone application service is this class that contains, amongst other things, a reference to current, which is lots of useful information about your application as it runs. And this thing will also fire events. And there you just use the standard IntelliSense wonderful way to actually bind methods to these things. There's a little caveat, bottom bullet point. Please bear in mind, do this in the game constructor. Because if you put it in the initialize method for the game, where you might think this kind of thing should happen, it won't work. Okay, so it'll signal its unhappiness by just failing to do anything, which I discovered as well. That was quite a nice one. So put this in the constructor. You've now got methods connected to all these various things, and now we can talk about what we're supposed to do. Right, launching gets its cue when the game is launched, hence the name. This happens once in the life cycle of a game. So the user's sitting there.
So this is where you've actually gone to the start menu, yeah, and you've gone, you know, with the games hub, and you said, oh, yeah, I really want to play Cheeselander.
Absolutely. So, I was just going to mention that. Yeah, absolutely. So they touch Cheeselander.
A new instance is created.
It's their first cheese experience of the day.
Yep.
And so a new instance of the game is brought in. It makes an empty state object, and it fires the game launching method to actually tell it, this is your first time. So as it says in the comment, this is a great place to go off to isolated storage, of which more a little bit later, and fetch everything in. Fetch in the highest score so far of Cheeselander, fetch in the name of that person. If you've got any kind of progress information about levels and stuff, bring all that in as well. Okay?
Yep.
So, bottom bullet point, if the user comes back to your game having had it tombstoned, you will not get this event fired. Okay? You won't see it except for the very first time. If the user starts your game two times in a row, so they play Cheeselander, and then they press start, and then they press Cheeselander again, you get launched a second time.
Yep, that's okay. Right. You get a new instance of the app, and the old one is lost.
Yep. Now, this is a way in which users can conceivably shoot themselves in the foot, in that they could play your game quite like it, press the start button, and then restart your game by running the game again. So you're going to have to make sure that when the game wakes up, it has a little look around to see where it's picking up from. So it's a bit of complication you have to deal with.
Now, interestingly, you could actually implement your own recovery in that situation, because you're still going to get the deactivated from the previous instance at some point. So you could save the volatile state of your game away. And then in your launching logic, you could you can go and look in your isolated storage and say, oh, here's some state. So you could put up one of these, you know, do you want to resume the previous game? Or start a new one?
This is a policy thing. I mean, if you have a game mechanic which is based on a level, progress through the level, beat the boss, onto the next level, you can make a design decision. If they do this kind of thing, do they get knocked back to the previous level start? Or do they get put back in the middle where they were before? Which do I want to do? And the decisions you make on those kind of things depend on how you make your launching events behave themselves. But yes, you're quite right. You could get told whenever you get pushed out of memory, that's when you're going to go, so you could drop everything back in isolated storage, which is guaranteed to always be there, and pull that back and then say continue or go back or whatever you want to do.
Yep.
But the point to bear in mind is that you only get to do this when the program is started effectively from cold.
Yep.
So that's when launching takes place. Okay. Activated is fired when you come back from being tombstoned. So your game, if you bind to those events, your game can actually know, hey, I'm being brought back from the grave. So I'm going to go have a look in my state objects to see if I can resume from there. But you're going to have a fallback, usually, to go have a look in your non-volatile storage as well, because one of the other nasties about this is if the user goes bonkers and starts and starts and starts and starts and starts, they can build up such an enormous collection of saved bits of programs that the system has to start throwing them away out of memory. So I'll come to that a bit later on, but there are some things you have to bear in mind when you get to this. And I'm going to do the deactivated event, and then we're all going to break for 5 minutes and do 20 press-ups or whatever, run around the building, and then we'll come back and finish it off. Deactivated, if the user actually tombstones you by pressing start, you get deactivated. You get a message to say, hey, you're going to die. Do something about it. And that's your point at which you will start saving stuff. And then finally, just to round things off, if the user actually closes your game, and we'll talk about how they would do that, there is actually an event that says, hey, okay, they've finished. They've stopped playing Cheeselander. They've left at the top level menu. They want to go home. They want to do something else. They want their lives back, okay? So at that point, you get a closing event, and that will actually take you to that point.
Okay? So do you have an XNA in the Silverlight sort of deactivate? We have this state object, which is this kind of sort of, well, there's two places you can store your volatile state of your application. There's the state object, which when you deactivate and then the system comes back and reactivates, you can go and look in that state object and pull stuff out. And then, of course, you have isolated storage, which is your kind of your permanent storage. So you and with the Silverlight, the advice is often to pretty much treat closing and deactivated are the same. So
you save
everything you need to down to isolated storage, because you cannot guarantee that you're going to come back. Yeah.
Exactly the same. If you've got all those concepts already nailed, then absolutely fine, you know where you're going. But yeah, what we'll be doing after the break, is nailing this down and then moving forward and looking at how you can use the storage to persist the game state and keep it going. Okay, so
great.
We'll see you in the merest hint of time at 5 past. And then we'll go right through until 11 o'clock and finish everything off. So come back for the summary and then the moving forward.